It is Friday, and ahead of this long holiday weekend, we do want you to get updated on everything that's happened and is still happening this week in our region, which means it is time for our reporter roundtable. Joining me live in studio today are Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press, Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News, and Don Day with Boise Dev. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, we're going to get right into it because we've got a lot to cover. So, Scott, a $90 million grant was just approved to widen I-84, and this starts in Nampa, where it honestly bottlenecks right at that Franklin exit. And frankly, I think it's kind of dangerous.
Oh, it is.
Right there.
Yeah, there are a lot of accidents at that bottleneck, and it goes down really from four lanes down to two lanes in a real hurry. And so this $90 million grant will widen an entire 3 miles or 2.8 miles of Interstate 84 to three lanes. And so this was announced on Wednesday morning. This is a federal grant, Infrastructure for Rebuilding America grant. It's part of the whole project to widen this 2.8 miles is going to cost $150 million. And so the rest is going to come from local and state funding, but they think this will do it and get that little stretch widened to three lanes.
And it should be finished, what, 2021?
Right.
Just in time to widen all the way out to Caldwell, probably.
Well, and that is next. And that's
I mean, seriously,
that,
right?
That is programmed.
And,
yeah, right? If it would just go all the way to Ontario. Yeah.
But they are talking about widening all the way to Caldwell to three lanes.
So when this happens, I mean, and we saw this years ago with the Flying Y, when they finished it, and then all of a sudden they had to redo it. And this was 18 years ago. That's a long time ago. But it seems like they do stretches. Why aren't they looking at widening all the way to Ontario? I know it's got to be money.
Yeah, it's money and it's need. You know, does I-84 need to be widened to three lanes now? Mm. No, and who knows when that would need to take place? So, you know, in some respects, it's smart to kind of do it piecemeal. Right. Rather than do it all at once and have, you know, three lanes, four lanes of highway sitting there unused.
And we do need it right at that bottleneck, though. So that will
Absolutely.
Be a good thing. Yeah. Yep. Don, I want to bring you into the conversation. Just on Boise Dev, you posted this just recently about another new proposed building for downtown Boise.
Boy, it just seems like every time you turn around, there's a new building popping up or proposed to pop up.
Mm-hmm.
And residential has been a big focus for the city of Boise, and they're starting to see dividends from this. This would be really the third major project, third or fourth, depending on how you look at it. A company that is headed up by GGLO, which has done some other projects here, is looking at doing an eight-story mixed use. So mixed use in this case meaning residential, commercial, and of course parking. And that would be on the block between, if you can kind of imagine this, between 2nd and 3rd on Myrtle.
Mm-hmm.
It would actually be right behind Winco Foods there. And it's a pretty significant project. It's in the very early stages. We don't even have renderings, or we don't know exactly how big it will be. They're asking to rezone the area to allow for this use right now.
Oh, so they have to go through a rezoning process.
They do. It fits the master plan for the area, the what they call the CAMP, which, of course, is an acronym I can't think of right now. Blame it on the cold medicine this week.
Yeah, totally. I get it.
It's a master plan for the area, and it calls for it, but the zoning actually isn't quite right.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying we need to do residential here, and it's a pretty significant project, about 1.3 acres there. And if you look at the renderings up on BoiseDev.com, you'll see it's pretty significant.
Oh, it
as
really
far as
is.
Size.
So my question is, and you said that you, Don, that they are seeing the benefits of this with these mixed use buildings. Are they really finding people to live in these buildings? Because rent or purchasing, I mean, they're not cheap to live in these new buildings downtown.
You know, you can look anecdotally, so you can pull up the listings on projects like the Owyhee or even the new Fowler building, and you'll still see that there are lots of units for rent. It took the Aspen Lofts, which was built in about 2008, a long time to fill up. So I do think the demand is there, but it is slow. Banks wouldn't be financing these things if the developers couldn't prove to them that they could do it. So I think that the long-term trends are there. Is it a boom? I'm not sure. I'm calling it a mini boom for right now. We'll see a couple more of these projects come online and then what happens next.
Yeah, and just more traffic closures if they build.
That
right?
is the yes, for that, drivers and cyclists alike.
Right? Exactly right. All right, so Kevin, school elections happened on Tuesday. So if you were not in a certain school area, you didn't vote. So get people updated.
Right. And it was kind of a mixed result. So you had bond issues and school levies in 11 districts across the state. But some of the big bond issues failed. The biggest of the group was Idaho Falls's bond issue of close to $100 million failed. Middleton took another run at a bond issue to build a new elementary school. It failed and failed with similar numbers that they got from at the polls in March. And interestingly, the superintendent of the Middleton School District, Josh Middleton, and yes.
Is he related to the founders of Middleton?
Yes, the superintendent of the Middleton School District has the last name of Middleton because why not?
Because why not?
It wrote a really interesting guest opinion saying, you know, this is, you know, the secret is out. Idaho is growing and voting no on these bond issues is really punishing students. And we just have to, you know, get on board with building and catching up with growth. So a fairly interesting take coming out of that election. I don't know what they're going to do in terms of trying to run another bond issue. But you see this happen in a lot of school districts, big districts, small districts. Wilder had a bond issue fail, and they were trying to replace a cafeteria that was built in 1940.
And it failed?
And it failed. They didn't even get they only got 39% support at the polls. It failed by a wide margin, and this is a you know, the superintendent says, look, this is we can only seat a few kids at a time in the cafeteria. It takes 2 hours to serve lunch. You know, we've got to do something. Mm-hmm. And it's tough to get that 2/3 majority for any kind of a bond issue. And when we saw that play out on Tuesday.
So what's interesting, getting back to Middleton, though, is that that is a place where a lot of people are building or moving to because
it's one of the fastest growing districts in the state.
Right. And so now you're looking at a new elementary school. I mean, what happens when they just physically run out of space because people are moving there?
More portables. They've got portables. Yeah. They get kids in portables right now, and so they'll just add more portables.
And if you talk to any superintendent, they'll say it's not just an issue with the portables. The cost of getting the portables in, it's not an optimal learning environment, and it's hard to keep those portables secure. And if you're talking about school safety and you're trying to ramp up school safety, it's hard to protect a portable that's detached from the main building.
So at this point, do you think that they will try to get this on the ballot, move forward with this again at some time since they've now failed a couple of times with it?
You know, I think in a case of Middleton or a case of Idaho Falls where administrators feel like there's a need that really has to be met, and this is the only way to meet it. You don't have any other way to build a school. It wouldn't surprise me to see another run at these bond issues, you know, maybe not November, but maybe at some point in 2019. I mean, and we see this happen. I mean, this isn't the first time that we've had districts have to go back to the polls on repeat occasions to try to get to that 2/3 threshold.
Well, didn't West Ada have to go back numerous times?
Mm-hmm. West Ada had to go back numerous times. We've seen other districts have to go back three, sometimes more than three times. You know, again, it's a tough hurdle, and it's built into the Constitution, so it's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fact of life for school districts and really any local government that's trying to build.
And speaking of schools, Scott, let's talk about CWI because they are, so College of Western Idaho, they're looking at going to the polls again in November.
Right. So they had a bond, $180 million bond a couple years ago that failed miserably to do buildings in Boise and buildings in Nampa. Well, so they're taking a new strategy to do it piecemeal. So they're going to be asking for a $39 million 10-year levy. It's not a bond. It's a levy.
Explain the difference between a levy and a bond. And the reason why I ask is I think a lot of people don't know the difference.
So a bond is borrowing money. So they would go to they would issue bonds out in the market for $39 million, and then they would pay that back over a certain amount of time. A levy is you take that money out of the property taxes every year.
Okay.
And so you're kind of paying as you go, whereas a bond is you're borrowing all the money up front and then paying it off over time.
And what do people like better normally, voters? Or does it matter?
Well, I think one reason that CWI is probably looking at a levy as opposed to a bond is it's a lot easier to pass one. A levy only requires a simple majority.
It's
a 55. Bond, or 55. Okay, but even so.
But a bond is two-thirds majority.
Because of the long-term debt and because of the constitutional language, you need to get a two-thirds supermajority, which it's hard.
Okay, so they are going for a $39 million levy.
Right, and so they have an agreement from the state permanent building fund to add $10 million to that. And with that money, they plan to build a health science building in Nampa on the existing CWI campus. That was one of the buildings that they had asked for previously in the $180 million bond that failed. And so now they're going, like Kevin said, it's going to be an easier hurdle to jump over with 55%. And just do the one building that they feel is the greatest need right now for their services.
But they're going to they will vote like the CWI.
Oh, right. So the CWI Board of Trustees has to vote to put this on the ballot. And so they will vote on Tuesday whether to put this on the ballot or not. I think, you know, CWI has been talking about this for the past several months now, and so we fully expect the board to actually put this on the ballot. So the board will vote on Tuesday, and if they approve putting it on the ballot, it will appear on the November 6th ballot, general election.
Will that go to voters in both counties then?
Yes.
So voters in Ada County will have to vote for a building in Kenny
County. Yeah,
correct. Interesting. Right. Because the
why?
The CWI district covers both counties.
Okay.
And so they have to get that 55% in both counties. And I think it's total, right? It's not each county. I think it's the total vote.
Yeah, I believe so. I think there have been talk about trying to change that so that you'd have to get the 55% in this case in both counties. But I think it's just cumulative.
Okay. And then but still, with that land then that they have sitting there in, near downtown Boise.
What is going to happen
Things
with that?
Things are happening there. Stay tuned.
All right.
And Who breaks it first?
And we need to take a quick break. And we're going to continue our reporter roundtable after this, talking about a study about homeless students. Going to talk about that. Also, 4 new urban renewal districts. Holy cow. All right. We're continuing our Friday Reporter Roundtable with my panel of journalists, Don Day with Boise Dev, Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News, and Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press. I tell you, sometimes I think we should keep the mics on during our breaks, because that's when we all talk about the theories around some of this. Anyway, want to get to Kevin, because Kevin, get people updated on this study about homeless students here in our state.
Some really interesting and really sobering research came out this week about the number of Idaho public school students who are homeless. And the number last year was more than 7,800 students were identified as homeless. And in a lot of cases, that may be a student who's just going from a friend's house to a friend's house, kind of couch surfing. But what this group, the Idaho Asset Building Network, found is that the number has increased by almost two-thirds over the past few years. And what they're saying is the root cause here is the rising cost of rentals and homes, in especially in the Treasure Valley. So a lot of the homeless problem, the homeless student problem, is centered in Ada and Canyon counties. About 40% of the homeless students, when I did the math, go to school in Ada or Canyon.
Seriously, 40%.
Right. Yeah, and this would stand to reason with all the growth, with all the development that we've seen in the Treasure Valley and what we continue to see. But what this group found is, and this is kind of sobering and maybe not too surprising, you've got pockets of high levels of homeless students in some high poverty rural districts around the state. And here we're talking about any place from like Clark County in eastern Idaho to Payette on the Oregon border to Lapway by the Nez Perce Indian Reservation. And here you've got numbers that are even higher. We've got maybe 10% to 20% of students are identified as homeless. So, you know, the research really shed a light on an issue that, as Idaho grows, this is not a problem that's likely to go away. The numbers haven't exactly increased over the past couple of years. They've kind of flattened out, but still 7,800 students. That's a lot of students.
And do they run the range from elementary school through high school? Did they do numbers on that?
They didn't break down by grade, but stands to reason that this would be spread across the K-12 system and, you know, creating different challenges for teachers and principals and administrators at different grade levels. I mean, you know, this kind of extreme upheaval in a young life is going to create a lot of different challenges in kindergarten. It's going to create different challenges in high school and everywhere in between.
So once they did the study, I mean, is there any idea or talk on, okay, what now do we do since we have these numbers? Because it's surprising but not surprising because of the growth.
Right. And what the researchers pointed to this week as a glimmer of hope, and it comes of all places, the glimmer of hope comes from Washington, D.C. There was a spending bill passed in the Senate a few weeks ago that increases the amount of money that would be available for rental vouchers for families to help, help cover the cost of rent in situations where, their income is just, out of whack with what they're having to pay in terms of rent. So the hope is that some of that money will find its way into Idaho and help some families, because this is obviously a family crisis in addition to a student crisis.
Right, because you're not just, it's not a student who's homeless. If a student is homeless, especially if you're looking at elementary school, that means a family is homeless.
Right.
So, Don, let's talk about getting back to growth. Urban renewal districts. What we're looking at, four.
Yeah, the Capital City Development Corporation, which is the urban renewal agency for Boise, as well as their partners at the City of Boise, are looking at four different districts, and they're a little different than what we have traditionally thought of for urban renewal. So, right now, urban renewal is used as a tool in downtown Boise exclusively, at least within the City of Boise. They want to build out four additional districts, and two are going to happen here pretty quickly if everything goes as planned. So let's talk about the four. The first is called Gateway East. This would be a large industrial area that surrounds Interstate 84, mostly to the south of town and east of the airport. You can see maps of all these on BoiseDev.com. This one is huge. It's actually, right now the study area is 3,500 acres. So
wow.
It's a big chunk of land.
But you're talking industrial.
Mostly industrial desert land right now. That one, this week, an eligibility study was approved by Boise City Council. Next, they'll move on to a feasibility study for that. They hope to have this one stood up and ready by the end of the year. The next one is an area around the shoreline area. This, a lot of people thought maybe this was precipitated by the stadium. In fact, some of my reporting shows that that's kind of what got this moving. But a stadium won't be happening in that area, but they're still going to do the district. This would be on both sides of the Boise River, kind of centered around Ann Morrison Park and then the Lusk District. And here they're hoping to use some of the tools that they've used downtown, streetscapes and different areas to help improve that and boost economic vitality. The other two won't happen this year, but will happen in future years. One is for a high-speed rail corridor for State Street, and this would run basically from downtown all the way out to the city limit near Horseshoe Bend Road. And it's kind of a long, skinny strip of land. The idea there is to give them tools to help build a high-frequency bus route that would run out State Street. Anybody who's driven State Street at peak mute times or even
anytime
peak times knows it's kind of a mess. And people also understand that the bus system in Boise is relatively underdeveloped. I'll actually just take the relatively out there. It's not very good. So they're trying to find any tool that they can to increase mass transit in the valley.
So, Don, when they say high speed, are we talking buses?
We're talking
or
buses.
A rail? Okay, so not a rail
Yeah,
system.
They haven't been super specific on what they may have planned. They've been working on this for more than a decade. There's eight agencies involved, and it looks like a kind of a high-frequency bus route, maybe every 15, 10, 5 minutes, where you could get on and go out from downtown to
all the way to Horseshoe Bend.
Yeah, and that could theoretically hook into a larger plan for mass transit in the city and in the valley. And then the last one is the bench. And so this would include, right now is studied, Vista Avenue, Overland Road, Orchard Street, and the Tank Farm. The city has, as I first reported last year, looked at moving the Tank Farm to an area near the Boise Airport. They're hoping to do that at some point in the future and redevelop that area. It's kind of a funny little pocket of the Central Bench. It's almost industrial, and I think that they look at that as a place that they could move things like tank farms and warehouses out and bring in other uses like homes and that type of thing to help spruce up that area near kind of St. Alphonsus.
Okay. And speaking of development, Scott, Dry Creek.
Right. the Ada County Commissioners approved Dry Creek development, a proposal for 1,800 houses in a relatively rural area of Ada County over protests of a pretty organized
group. There was substantial protest over this.
Yeah, and they showed up at the Ada County Commissioners meeting this week with duct tape over their mouths and holding up signs saying silenced. And they had one protester who was dressed as an elk out on the street getting cars honking at them to rally their cause. But it did get approved. The commissioners approved it, basically saying that they had no other option. They had to either approve an earlier approval of 3,500 houses, which really sparked the ire of residents. And the developer came back with a different proposal for 1,800 houses. And so the commissioners said, we can't really deny this because it was already approved. And they came back with a new proposal for fewer houses, less density, that matches a little better anyway. And so they went ahead and they approved that this week.
And Kevin, want to talk about more elections coming up, correct? School elections?
Right. If you're in the Boise School District, Tuesday is an election day, believe it or not. And it is a fairly important election. You've got three school board seats up for grabs. And there will be a new school board member regardless of what happens on Tuesday. You have two incumbents running. A.J. Belukov, long-time incumbent, is stepping down. So you have six candidates for three seats. There will be some change, some upheaval on the school board. We'll see what happens come Tuesday.
And what happens with that? I mean, you're talking at least one new, you know, board member. That will that be a significant change, though, in how, you know, the school district moves forward?
Depends on who gets elected, obviously. I mean, when we had the candidates at a forum the Chamber of Commerce put together last week, there wasn't a whole lot of difference between a lot of what we heard from several of the candidates. So, yeah, you know, my guess is you're not going to see you know, huge turmoil and tumult in the Boise School Board just because you have one new school board member. But what if you have a really, you know, what if you have a real change election? I mean, let's speak hypothetically, and we have three new school board members. I mean, things happen on school boards. I mean, just ask West Ada what they went through a few years ago with a lot of dissent and a lot of tension between the school board and superintendents. It has been known to happen. I'm not predicting that that's going to happen after Tuesday's election, but that's why these local elections matter. And historically, very low turnout for these school board elections. But these are the folks who make policy at the local level for schools. So if you're concerned about, you know, school facilities, if you're interested in what's happening, you know, at the ground level in your schools, these are important elections.
And they never happen on an actual, they never coincide with election day, which
because of the Boise School District's unique charter, they have elections the Tuesday after Labor Day. And it is, as Idaho Press reported a few weeks ago, it is literally the only election in Idaho on Tuesday.
Right. And then nobody comes out.
The day after
go figure.
A holiday.
The day after a
go
holiday.
Figure, right?
Brilliant.
Right? Yeah, it's fascinating. Maybe someday they'll change the charter. Who knows? I want to thank all of you for coming in today. It is always a pleasure for the Reporter Roundtable. My guests, Kevin Richert with Idaho Education News, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press, and Don Day with Boise Dev. Thanks so much. Have a good holiday weekend.
Thanks. You too.
Thank you.